Good evening and welcome back. My name is Chris. I am your host. Joining me tonight are Dan.
Hey.
Tiff.
Hi.
Dean.
Hey.
Thanks for taking it creepy. And our special guest, Jay Payne.
Hello!
Tonight is going to be all about the majesty that is Final Fantasy VII. There will be materia, there will be chocobos, there will be extremely long swords. Will we survive the night? Find out right now. This is the Stone Age Gamer. Hi everybody, and welcome. This is episode 50 of the Stone Age Gamer, and tonight we have a special episode because it is all about a listener request. A gentleman by the name of Anthony Hom sent us a very nice email about how much he likes our show, and after listening to the Metal Gear-centric episode we did for another listener, he wanted us to do an episode based entirely on Final Fantasy VII and its effect on the gaming industry. So we're happy to oblige Anthony, and here we go. We're going to talk about Final Fantasy VII. So, I'm correct in assuming that all four of us have played the game in some way, shape, or form.
Yup.
Big fan.
There's five of us.
And yes. All five of us. Sir, you're forgetting our special guest.
Five.
Me.
Oh, crap, that is five. See, I was...
Hey, what's up?
I didn't forget about you. I forgot how to count. I don't know which one's worse. Anyway,
the counting. You're a grown ass man. Figure that shit out.
Final Fantasy.
So
what number Final Fantasy are
so
we?
So 3 and 6 are the same, and
2 and 4 are the same.
And all those together equal 47. So Final Fantasy 47. That's the one we're talking about. Big fan. All right, let's go.
That's the one. Well, I guess I'll start off with a little bit of a background info on Final Fantasy VII, because it was a real turning point for, I guess, kind of the gaming industry as a whole. Before Final Fantasy VII, Square Enix and Nintendo had an extraordinarily tight relationship. All the Final Fantasies were released on Nintendo platforms. 1 through 6, handful of spin-offs, Game Boy stuff, all sorts of stuff. Final Fantasy was very much equated with Nintendo platforms. Then they started working on Final Fantasy VII, and it was going to be just this amazing, giant, sprawling thing. You started seeing some screenshots show up in Nintendo Power, because there was a tech demo out there of Final Fantasy VI characters running on a 3D polygonal engine. And there was the hype was starting to build, because Final Fantasy III in America, which was actually Final Fantasy VI in Japan, was the first time an RPG gathered a real serious foothold here in America. And because, you know, Final Fantasy I was fairly successful here in the States, but it was way more successful in Japan. Final Fantasy, II and III we didn't get, but we got IV as II, and then we skipped V, and then we got VI, because VI was a masterpiece. It's actually my favorite Final Fantasy by far, but when that game came out, it was the first one that had a really good marketing push to it, some pretty memorable TV commercials, and it gained some traction here in America. It was a pretty successful game.
Don't forget about Mystic Quest.
Oh, Mystic Quest. Oh, Mystic Quest. Mystic Quest was Japan's attempt to get RPGs to be popular in America by making a beginner's RPG.
So bad.
Yeah,
so
it is not a good game. It does have a good soundtrack, but it is not a good game. Anyways, so Final Fantasy VII was slated to be coming to the Nintendo Ultra 64, and then Nintendo, in their infinite wisdom, said, you know what we're going to do? I know CDs are all the rage right now, but we're going to stick with cartridges, because we hate loading times. And Square was like, well, and I believe they actually printed this in one of their ads, if we were to make Final Fantasy VII on a cartridge, it would be like, it would weigh 5,000 pounds and cost $1 million per unit or something.
I love it, let's do it.
I think the final number was like 47 cartridges that it would have taken or some nonsense like that.
Yeah, something, it was just absolutely absurd, because it would have been. There would have been no way to compress all this stuff onto a single cartridge. And in fact, there wasn't even a way to compress it onto a single CD, but because of CDs, they're so cheap, that wasn't a problem. So after Nintendo made that announcement and basically spat in the face of all the third parties that wanted to make these really awesome, incredible new types of experiences that involved things like voice acting and full motion video, Nintendo was like, Miyamoto made Mario 64, and he was like, I hate loading times, so we're going to stick with cartridges because there's no loading times there. And it just, the third parties ran screaming in the other direction. They said, you know what? We like you, Nintendo, but you're not the easiest company to work with, and I don't really want to mess with the Saturn. Let's go over to the PlayStation.
The Saturn looks like it's not good. So this really was like that decision. I mean, Final Fantasy VII kind of gave Sony the foothold in the market. Surprisingly enough, a genre that wasn't hugely popular granted Sony this incredible market share.
It did, yeah.
I feel like Square was this kid picking its teammates out for dodgeball, and you have Nintendo, who's like the preppy, nerdy one who's like, it's going to tell you what to do and how to do it. Then you have Sega, who is like just beating off in the corner, being all creepy and shit.
Dean actually did the movements, just so you know.
That fucking happens in dodgeball games that you play?
I have no idea where this metaphor is going, and I'm...
It was a weird... And then you have fucking Sony, which is like, oh, it's the new kid. Let's give him a shot. And it kind of worked out. Better than beating off in the corner with the weird Sega kid.
All right, so 6 minutes and 40 seconds in, and I am already really uncomfortable.
But side note, I actually didn't know the history of this, so that's pretty awesome. I had no idea.
Yeah, and it was a pretty big deal, because the Nintendo 64 was actually, and this particular decision, I mean, when they decided to stick with cartridges, they lost any shot at getting Resident Evil, they lost any shot at getting Tomb Raider, and they lost any shot at getting Final Fantasy VII. Like, this was where Nintendo's third-party troubles started happening, because up until then you had the NES, which they had all the third parties in their pocket, basically. Then you had the Super NES, which they had all the third parties working for them. And then they were like, nah, fuck technology. We're sticking with the N64. And look what happened. They lost so much third-party support. They missed out on all these great games. And now they're the company that they are, with the relationships they have, where they have a hard time getting people make third-party games on their consoles. The games that they make are the games that sell their systems, and not the other stuff, not the other way around. And it all stems from this decision. And Final Fantasy VII is the example of that, because if you look at when we were talking about Metal Gear, another great example, if they had stuck with CDs, Metal Gear probably would have been on a Nintendo console to begin with, because, I mean, Kojima loves... people who work for Nintendo, Solid Snake's been in wacky Nintendo things from time to time, so it probably would have been a Nintendo 64 game, but there would have been no way to do it at that point, and that gave Sony that shot in the arm. I mean, and I get where Nintendo was coming from. They had been burned by CD Tech twice now, like with the whole Sony fallout, where it just wasn't working the way they wanted it to, and so they went their own separate ways, and then they did the whole Philips CDI thing, which was just a goddamn disaster.
That was a thing.
And then sort of the loading times were, I mean, they were an issue. It was a different kind of experience. And I remember when that happened, when they made that decision, that was the only piece of it that I kind of got. Like, I was pretty upset when they were like, nah, we're sticking with cartridges. I was like, oh man, this is not where the future is. The future is in compact discs and stuff. But they started talking about the loading times, and I remember playing some PC games and thinking, yeah, loading time is an issue. I mean, if you look at some early PlayStation 1 games, I mean, geez, loading time is an issue. Loading time is still an issue with a lot of stuff, but it was the way the technology was going, and this was the first time that Nintendo willingly just said, no, fuck technology.
Yeah, they simply guessed wrong. They assumed that people would be way too pissed off to deal with loading times, whereas for the most part, those of us who jumped on board with CD-based systems said, no, the loading times suck, certainly, but it's worth it. The trade-off is worth it. And they just guessed wrong.
Well, and it was so short-sighted of them to think that the technology is never going to progress. Like, I get that at the beginning the loading times were god-awful, and when they were seeing even earlier prototypes than what actually made it to market, I'm sure they were infinitely worse. But to assume that technology is never going to advance and that's never going to get better is just ridiculous.
It is. It's just as ridiculous as their approach to internet. I mean, you know, they made the GameCube capable of all the internet stuff. There was a broadband adapter for it and everything. It was perfectly capable because third parties were just like, look, you need to have this stuff available to us. But then Nintendo was like, sure, here's the modem, but we're not going to build an infrastructure because the internet is a fad. This isn't going to stick around. I mean, Christ, they've got Splatoon coming out real soon, which I hear is great. And even here, the online experience is great. In 2015, congratulations, way to catch up. But even still, it doesn't have voice chat. And it just, it's a perfect example of Nintendo's unwillingness to follow technology trends.
There are people defending that, though.
Yeah, I've actually heard that the voice chat doesn't hurt as much as I thought it would. Like, if I haven't played the game, I haven't been able to be around for any of the global test fires, but listening to some of the people that have played it, it's like, yeah, actually it doesn't matter that there isn't voice chat. But
well, and even beyond that, my kids are so excited to play Splatoon, and if I ever signed on one day and heard anybody calling anybody a fag and things like that, I'd have a real big problem with that, and I think that's probably where Nintendo is coming from.
Yeah, no, that's exactly where they're coming from. They didn't want this game to get sucked into that negativity that forms with online voice chat. But I guess the part of it that bothers me is that it should still be an option. Like, it shouldn't be the default that it's turned on, but you should give friends the option to communicate with each other. Just friends, you know, people that you know, you should have the option to communicate with them without having to go through Skype or something to plan strategies, because this is a strategic shooting game, and that kind of those kind of relationships that you can form with people, you should have that as an option. But I definitely understand the notion of wanting to turn that off on a default and say, no, there's too much negativity mm-hmm. out there, let's rein this in. But speaking of reining things in, Final Fantasy.
Master of segues.
But that's kind of the history there, and that's one of the main purposes. Well, one of the things Anthony wanted to talk about was its effect on the gaming industry, and that was one of the biggest ones that the Square pulling away from Nintendo had. Like, this game's existence, not being able to do it on cartridges, and Nintendo insisting that they wanted to stick with cartridges, was a huge turning point for one of the major players in the industry, and they haven't 100% recovered from that since, you know?
Yeah, it like, legitimized their competition.
It really did. It really, really did. Because before that, you know, Super Nintendo was a cool system. Like, cool games were available for it. You know, cool games were available on Genesis. But once Nintendo 64 hit, and the biggest hits on that platform, and it did have humongous sales. Like, when it first launched, it was, you know, through the roof, and third parties couldn't ignore the platform, but they had to make different games for it, because you couldn't put something like Soul Edge on there, because it just wouldn't function the same way.
Right.
So that whole situation was really, they never recovered from that, and that's where their big successes were Mario 64, Ocarina of Time, Banjo-Kazooie, and they were all family-oriented games. Like, sure, you had GoldenEye, but that was kind of like the exception to the rule. The big things that Nintendo 64 became known for were bright, colorful, family-oriented games, and they never really recovered from that.
No, it really started the... Because when you walked by in the mall or through a GameStop and saw the PlayStation demo disc running on whatever TVs that they had up at the time, and you saw Leviathan summoned for the first time, or you saw Bahamut summoned for the first time, it was cool. Like, you bought
It was cooler than cool. It was amazing.
You bought a PlayStation.
It was ice cold.
But like, you, it really put a divide.
Right.
In the gaming industry of like, Nintendo is for babies.
Kids. Yeah.
And PlayStation is cool.
For teenagers.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of demo discs, this was kind of, I mean, it was for me, my first interaction with Final Fantasy VII was the demo disc. I went to my friend Mike's house, who got the demo disc. and I was not prepared for what I saw, because I had this, I wasn't a huge fan of RPGs at this point. I remembered renting Final Fantasy III and disliking it, because I never liked the whole, you're running around on a map, and then something hits you, and all of a sudden you're somewhere else. And it wasn't until I played Chrono Trigger, where that no longer happens, where I started to like RPGs, and I liked the gameplay of it, but I still never went back and properly liked them. Chrono Trigger was the only one I liked at that point. When I saw Final Fantasy VII, when I saw that demo, and like you said, when I saw, I think it was a, you had Shiva and Ifrit and Leviathan available in the demo. If I remember correctly, it's been a long time.
Very, very long time.
But, oh my god, seeing those things and seeing the way that, you know, now instead of it being like, here's three guys on the right hand of the screen and some monster on the left hand of the screen, and they're going to do an animation and swing at it, and then, like, a little icon's going to show up to show that it's getting hit. Instead, it was still taking place in this weird imaginary world that happens when you start a battle that's not the same thing as your map screen, but Cloud would run up, swing his sword, and the enemy would react to it as if they were getting hit. Like, everything moved around in a certain way that kind of made it feel like there was consequences to your actions other than just numbers. And it really just tied the whole RPG thing together, and it made those battle sequences visually interesting in a way that they weren't in any game that I had ever seen besides Chrono Trigger. Because before that, it was always static images and numbers flying out of them when you swing your sword and get hit or whatever. And now the camera's panning around, somebody does a move, it highlights what that move is, and you still had that flow. Things were still moving in the same way that they did during a regular role-playing game, but now it was really interesting to look at as well as to play. And those combinations, plus the amazing graphics and the unreasonably good sound, like this game's soundtrack, we'll talk about it, all those pieces coming together, and it being on this CD system, this brand new PlayStation system, like you said, if somebody walked past somewhere and saw that running, there's no way that's not going to turn your head, because it looked amazing, and it still looks good enough. when looking at it now,
most of it looks good. The polygonal overworld shit is so bad.
This is actually why I hate this game. I cannot stand the way that the characters look in the overworld, and what even more I can't stand is that there are three different sprites, if you will, for each character. You have the super chibi deformed overworld, then you have the really polished cutscene, you know, looks super good, super sharp, like everything looks awesome.
The full motion video.
And then you have something kind of in the middle for the battle scenes. For the first 2 hours that I played Final Fantasy VII, I kept having to remind myself that this person that I'm looking at now is the same person that I was looking at a second ago, even though they look nothing alike. And my biggest complaint is that the story is very rich, and it's very dark and very complicated, and I have a really hard time giving a crap about any of that when it's coming out of a Lego minifig.
Well, how do you...
Go on.
I'm sorry, I really love the story of the game, that's why. But it's like, if you're reading a book, you have to kind of make up your own images, so what's the difference between making up your own images versus just one that they happen to give you?
Because I can't make up my own image when you're showing me an image.
You can't close your eyes because you have to read it.
And what's particularly upsetting about that is that the backgrounds are so beautiful. To watch these little wonky-looking, blocky, bonkers little sprites walk around on such a beautiful background is so bizarre to me. And I just feel like some really strange choices were made there. But I really think that if you had picked a style and stuck with it, I could have gotten behind it a lot more.
Well, I think a lot of that was technical limitations, and I kind of get it and I kind of don't, because on one hand, they used to do that in the older Final Fantasy games, and it pissed me off then, too, where the character on the map would be a small little chibi thing, and then you'd get into the actual battle sequence, and your character was larger and more detailed. Final Fantasy VI, they did away with that. The sprites were the sprites, you know?
Right.
Like, you had your characters acting and emoting, and they looked what they looked like for the game, and I loved that aspect.
Shadow looks like Shadow the whole time.
Right. If your technical limitations say that you can't have this complicated of a character on your overworld map, then you make your simplistic character during the cutscene. You don't make three different characters representing the same person.
If you made the character during the cutscene, that would have taken away from the overall game. I mean, the big part of that game was the FMV scenes. If you took that away, you're taking away from the grand feeling of the game for the most part.
Well, I mean, if you look at Metal Gear, see, this is one of the things I appreciate so much about Metal Gear, is that they had an extraordinarily complex, epic storyline filled to the brim with cutscenes, and they used all in-game engine to do those cutscenes so that they wouldn't lose that cohesion that comes from having these characters look the same all throughout the game. Because even though, as a teenager at the time, I could look at it and say, I understand why this looks like this here and why this looks like it in the FMV cutscenes. I understand why these look so different. But when one of the things that Final Fantasy VII did extraordinarily well and was also a kind of a double-edged sword was the way that they kind of combined the FMV sequences with the gameplay itself. Like, the way the game starts when the camera's panning in and it eventually lands and stops and then the characters walk onto the screen, like, that was seamless. Like, from one standpoint, the actual backgrounds, because the backgrounds were all these, they were basically just running a single animation sequence of this static image and then having the polygons run around on an invisible plane on top of it to kind of scale with the imagery. But the way that they blended those things together was nothing short of genius. But the fact of the matter is that some cutscenes would incorporate that same level of detail in the backgrounds and the characters themselves, and then other cutscenes would incorporate that level of detail in the backgrounds and have the polygonal characters included to try to cut down on how jarring it was that the characters just didn't match.
Right. Like,
and
the biggest example that makes me so mad is Barrett. Barrett tells his backstory while they're still polygonal, and he tells this emotional, gut-wrenching story of revenge and why he's in this, and he does it looking really stupid. And I had a really hard time connecting during those moments, because you look like a goofy little cartoon character shaking your giant oversized fists, but you're telling me this emotional story, and I'm having a really hard time putting those two things together, when just a minute ago I saw this fabulous cutscene with all this beautiful animation, but right now I'm watching a low budget cartoon. It totally removed me from the story and totally messes with the flow of the game, I think.
Well, I get what you're saying, but I mean, the other thing is, that's easy to say now, but the game was also 4 discs when it came out. If they did FMV just going in and out seamlessly for everything, this game could have easily been double the size.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it took a lot to squeeze this all down to 4 discs. I can't imagine if they tried to, you know, just do full motion for everything and just try to blend it together.
That's kind of what I'm saying, is if you couldn't do it, then you shouldn't have done it at all. I think that the game would have been better if everything
I don't think that's very fair to say. It's a fantastic story. If they had to sacrifice something, you sacrifice it. You don't, like, for me, I guess personally, it doesn't matter to me whether the animation's kind of crappy or not. That's not my main focus typically. My main focus is always the story and the plot line. So I guess that's why it didn't bother me as much. But I don't think you can say that you'd rather not make it.
No, I'm not saying not make it. I'm saying that if you can't make everything consistently at that high of a level, then take it down some levels so that it is all consistent, because I feel like all of that stuff gets in the way of the great story. I agree that it is a fantastic story.
Yeah, you'd rather consistency on all levels than going back and forth.
I would rather it have been lower. Yeah, I would rather it have been technologically lower and been all consistent so that I could just focus on the story than start like, okay, who is that guy? Oh, no, this is the same guy I've been playing this whole time. He just looks dramatically different.
Yeah, switching focus.
I think they were just trying to swing for the fences, and you know that was their best
but
attempt.
But wasn't like Final Fantasy VIII, I barely remember. Were there chibi characters in 8?
I don't believe there were. I think that they I think that they did learn that lesson after
7. Right, that's what I'm saying.
And they went for everything had that consistent art style. And I think every game since then has had that consistent art style as well, like 9 and 10 and all
that. I remember 9. It was you either had the FMV sequences or you were in just the regular. Actually, I think 9 had 3 different characters. I think your battle characters were slightly different than your walking around characters.
Yeah, but they shared more of a similar art style. They didn't look like 3 different characters. Right. It's like, you know, Zidane looked extraordinarily well detailed and frighteningly like an Olsen twin during the CG sequences. And when you played him in the game, of course, he was scaled back significantly. And the same thing for something like Chrono Cross, where they did that similar situation, but the art style was consistent with one another, so it wasn't as jarring. Like, yes, it looked a lot uglier, but it was still, you could still see the clear delineation between point A and point B.
Well, and I think that's the biggest thing. Like, looking at Final Fantasy VII then, it was such a huge influence on graphics, and really not so much like art style or direction or anything, but it really raised the bar for what people expected. Because nothing had ever looked like that before Final Fantasy VII came out. And then that game came out and people were, holy shit, that looks amazing. So it raised the bar.
And yeah, then, I mean, it's easy to pick apart.
Yeah, and that's
now,
what I'm saying.
But
like, if you go back and play it now, everything looks great, but those polygonal characters look so much worse now. Like, in hindsight, they look so, so bad.
Yeah, Dan, you bring up a really interesting point, actually.
It's all
and
I
it's
do,
another
sir.
Thing. And you do it so well. And with style. Another major effect that this had on the gaming industry, this game had, was it did raise the bar, but it also, the JRPG genre, when this came out, was really kind of on a bit of a high horse. Like, it was a vibrant style of game making, and over the years that kind of started to tank, and a lot of that came from any developers wanting to make a role-playing game that you had to match that level. You had to throw all that money into making your games, and as technology got, like, we got to the PlayStation 2 and the PlayStation 3, deciding to make an RPG became this insanely expensive proposition in order to make the worlds look up to par with something of like a Final Fantasy VII or just the Final Fantasy franchise in general. And I remember the PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, and Wii.
That was
era.
A rough time for RPGs, man.
It was
that
rough,
was
and there
rough
was actually a small exodus of RPG designers that wound up just saying, "Screw it, we're gonna make games for the Wii because it's cheaper." And that's where we got Xenoblade Chronicles and Last Story, and to an extent Pandora's Tower. But there was like a handful of RPG developers that were like, we can't afford the risk of making an HD RPG and having it fail. Because if
was
you look
that
at
when Lost Odyssey came out?
Yeah, Lost Odyssey.
Yeah,
that was,
I loved Lost Odyssey.
What was it? That was Mistwalker Studios, I think, that did Lost Odyssey.
Yeah, I mean, there weren't many RPGs on the system to begin with. I mean, notable ones were Blue Dragon, Lost Odyssey, Last Remnant, Final Fantasy XIII, and I, you know what, I'm kind of drawn blanks.
And Lost that's Odyssey. The thing. You just named a list of games that I promise nobody will ever record a podcast about.
Yeah. <No. laughs> What's interesting about Lost Odyssey was that and I'm going to have to fact check myself on it, but I believe
I cried during it.
Lost Odyssey was also from Mistwalker Studios, which was some of the original creators of Final Fantasy, you know, broke away from Square Enix, wanted to do their own thing. They made this huge budget HD RPG, and they didn't succeed. Like, they made a good game, but it didn't sell enough to make the money that it cost to make the thing. And they said, fine, we're going to make another one. We're going to make another RPG because this is what we do, but we're going to do it on Wii because it doesn't need to be HD. And it was a phenomenal game, but it was also a late-term RPG on the Wii, and nobody bought that either. So,
Mistwalker and Fuel Plus.
It was a tough time, and because Final Fantasy VII started Japanese role-playing games on that path, it actually turned out to the detriment of the entire species, I guess, of game, because nobody was able to recreate that success financially after they started it. And it wasn't until, I'd say, maybe the last like 5 or 6 years that you started seeing retro style RPGs and things really kind of like dialing back and kind of going for a more retro style, and those games being successful, looking at stuff from Nipponichi Software and the Shin Megami Tensei type games.
Atlas.
That kind of stuff is starting to become more popular in a JRPG sense because, I mean, geez, the amount of money that it costs to make something like Final Fantasy XIII, they need to be million plus sellers just to make their money back. And that's a really dangerous proposition when putting together a video game.
Yeah, it was...
No, quite a dice roll.
Saw the budget in doing some research for this. The final budget for Final Fantasy VII, when you factor in the game development, was $45 million. Sony then put out a $100 million marketing campaign. So from day one, before you have shipped one disc, you have to sell $145 million worth of game to break even.
Well,
and that's
insane. All right, Dan, you teach things. At $40 a pop, how many discs would that take?
Like seven, I think. I'm not a math teacher.
Seven.
So.
Okay. Well, good. We're at seven. But I mean, roughly, you would have to sell
3.6 million
over
3.6 million. Yeah.
That is a lot of video
games. And they
did. I mean, lucky for them, it went like triple, quadruple, platinum, greatest hits, Omega Shenron.
Well,
but, you know,
and
whatever.
I think one of the other big influences that it had on the gaming industry and why it was so successful is because if we're being honest, and I see no reason to lie to the listeners, the fantasy genre is kind of nerdy. It's kind of a thing that, like, most people look at and go, "Eh, not for me."
You're saying that wrong. It's not for a casual gamer.
No. I what I'm saying is that walking by in the store, and maybe I'm wrong, but the point that I was going for is that walking by in a store, if I see a demo disc and shit looks like Dungeons and Dragons, I don't fucking play Dungeons and Dragons because that shit's nerdy to me. You know what I mean? I don't mean any offense by that. But with Final Fantasy VII, it was the traditional RPG style, but it also looked cool. Not just that it looked great and like really pretty, but it was kind of cool at the same time because it was industrial and in a city and it wasn't wizards and shit.
This guy has a sword that he shouldn't even be able to lift.
Yeah, you know
what
I mean?
Cool.
But what I like about that is that it broke RPGs away from everything having to be swords and sorcery and wizards and pointy hats and shit, and gave us a world where Shin Megami Tensei exists, and the Persona games, and you get RPGs like Sega tried with, I think it was PS3 and 360, Alpha Protocol, which was a spy series, like, in an RPG world. That's awesome. The game sucked, but I liked the fact that we can do that now, whereas previously, that just wasn't the case.
Sega, still fucking up in 2015. Good job.
But I
keep swinging for the fences, Sega. Yeah. You keep being you.
But I think that is a huge influence on the industry as a whole. You took a very traditional genre and said, no, it doesn't have to be like that. We can do other things.
Yeah, and they started to do that in Final Fantasy VI, but yeah, Final Fantasy VII was where they really went like, now we can make a sci-fi RPG and we can do it well. And I don't know if it's the first one that ever did it, but it was certainly the first one that did it with this level of success.
Right, and you know, I don't mean any offense to people who love D&D or anything like that.
Mean any offense by calling you people huge ginormous nerds.
Well, but I'm just being honest. Like, to me, that's my nerd line. Like, that's the line that I haven't crossed. I tried, and I went, this is fucking nerdy, and it's not for me. I understand that it is a huge thing, and is, you know, it's for a lot of people. But I think looking at this game as an influential benchmark, it kind of broke that stereotype.
My nerd line was classic Doctor Who.
I don't have a nerd line. I've crossed every single one so far.
Kind of same.
Yeah, I don't have a nerd line. All right, well, we're going to take ourselves a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about the story of Final Fantasy VII, and probably a bit about the music as well, and whatever else strikes our fancy. So, stick around. And now, here's a look at some of the other original content available right now at Geekade.com.
Hey, Dean.
Hey, Jess.
Do you like berries?
Yeah.
How about beer? Have you ever poured beer on berries and tried to drink them? Oil is a terrible idea. Yeah, don't do it. Not unlike fruity beer. But wait, what if all fruity beer wasn't a terrible idea?
Are you still asking me questions?
Do we live in such a world?
Oh, God.
Find out in the imbibing scribe, Ballads and Berries.
I love it.
After 25 years, the Nintendo World Championships are returning, and our very own Chris Randazzo is going to attempt to compete. He's been posting about it on our Instagram. Oh, you didn't know we had one of those? Well, we do. And a Twitter, and a Tumblr, and an Elo, whatever the fuck that is, and all manner of other social media things you can look at. Follow Chris's journey with the hashtag #RoadToNWC.
Go second.
Will his body be ready?
Hope so. He's gonna kick your fucking ass. Perfect pork chops. That's what Steven Universe is about, and Steven Universe is a delightful cartoon about a boy named Steven, if you couldn't gather that from the cartoon title. Don't believe me? Well, perhaps you'll believe Geekade's Samantha Ahern, because she's written all about why you should be watching this show. Check out Steven Universe, A Perfect Pork Chop, because if you don't, I'm going to be really upset, because I fucking love that cartoon!
We did another live episode of the Waveback Music Podcast this week, and in case you missed it, it's available right now on our website for your listening pleasure. It was about Sonic the Hedgehog 2, and it was filled to the brim with Genesis-y goodness.
It was. I was there.
Yeah?
And finally, I mean that, Geekade was Atlantic City Boardwalk Con, and we have the videos to prove it. We interviewed COD players.
Love fish. Oh, shit, COD players? Awesome.
I can go for some COD.
Who couldn't, Jess?
COD
Who
fish.
Who couldn't? I love COD. COD fish, COD pieces. I'm all about the COD.
COD Modern Warfare. COD Blops.
COD Blops.
Oh, I'm all about the COD. No bass. No bass. Gross.
Mega Man and Bass.
Well, Chris, you said COD players, but were there also cosplayers
there? Were.
There?
There were. We interviewed cosplayers, retailers, artists, and more. It can all be viewed right now on our YouTube channel. So what are you waiting for? Go watch them. We'll wait.
Well, we have to kidding. Wait for this podcast to be over.
Yeah, we can do it when the podcast is over, or you can pause. We don't have to wait. We're recorded. Don't miss all this, plus tons of other great articles, videos, podcasts, and more, exclusively at Geekade.com. Hi, everyone. With South Jersey Geek Fest and Atlantic City Boardwalk Con behind us, Geekade's summer tour is half over, but the biggest events are still to come. First, we're going to be at Too Many Games at the Greater Philadelphia Expo Center on June 26th, 27th, and 28th. We'll be at the StoneAgeGamer.com's booth, and we're even hosting a live panel at the event. Then on July 25th and 26th at the William G. Menin Sports Arena in Morristown, New Jersey, Geekade is taking over Garden State Comic Fest 2015. We'll be hosting another live panel, as well as walking the show floor and doing all sorts of fun things with everyone we meet. Don't read too much into that. So come out and meet us all live in person. We might even have some cool swag giveaway. See you there. Well, we are back, and be thankful that you will never hear what we talked about during the break. Anyway, we're talking about Final Fantasy VII, and now we're going to take a little look at the story of Final Fantasy VII, which is, at least in my opinion, a high point and a low point, but let's hear something from our Final Fantasy VII expert on the story. Jess, tell us about your
feelings. Wait a minute, why am I an expert on the story?
Because I deemed you an expert. Congratulations, you're now an expert. Talk to us about the story of Final Fantasy VII.
Well, that's great.
Say it. Oh, it's fucking good.
I put you on the podcast one time.
There's like a beginning and a middle and an end, and some shit happens in the middle. It's a fucking great story.
And then you go snowboarding.
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10 snowboarding and weird.
Chocobos!
All right.
I don't know what I'm supposed to talk about.
Okay, all right, okay. Yeah, all right, I got this. Okay, so.
Am I recapping? Like, I don't.
What do you think? You're going to fucking make shit up? You're not going to rewrite the story. We just want you to tell us what happened.
All right. Final Fantasy VII fanfic. Go.
Oh, my God. Okay. So great. So, one day. Wait. First of all, we have to clarify this right now. Are we going to pronounce it Aerith or Aeris?
It's Aeris.
And while we're on pronunciation, can we talk about Mako?
Oh,
Macau.
Yeah.
What?
Steve.
It's
Macau.
I always said Mako.
Me too.
But apparently that's not correct. It's Mako?
No, it's not, because a Mako shark is spelled the same way, isn't it?
Like a taco?
So in Mass Effect, you drive a Mako?
Shut up. Shut up and either explain Final Fantasy or don't talk about fucking Mass Effect.
I really think I need to go away because Dean hates
me. No, that's another influence that it had on the gaming industry, though. Jess, talk about Mass Effect.
Mass Effect rocks. It's three games of delicious story and some sexy space time.
Do you play as FemShep?
Yes, I did. All three times.
What the fuck are we doing? This is... Oh, my God. Oh, my
God.
So,
in Final Fantasy VII, you are fucking, like... freedom fighters at the beginning of like in or environmental freedom fighters, and then the story comes off the rails in a big bad way.
Quite literally, wasn't there a train involved?
Yeah, that was the joke, Chris. It's not as funny when you have to explain it.
And then the Nice Girl gets stabbed in the chest.
Oh, stop.
So maybe this makes me a bad person, and we're jumping way ahead in the story, but like Aeris died.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah,
spoiler alert. Sorry.
In case you didn't know, like the most dramatic scene in gaming history.
Aeris dies. Is it? Yeah, whatever. However we're saying her name.
Aeris, yeah.
And, like, it was this huge, big, impactful moment that they also did in, like, three other Final Fantasy games previously.
Yeah, they killed someone every time.
Yeah, I think it's because...
But she was the nice girl.
I'm trying to think of, I forgot what Final Fantasy, was it Final Fantasy IV, like the American Final Fantasy IV? The two twins, because I never beat it, did they like, when they turned to stone, they died, right? Like they're gone? The mage twins?
I think.
Sure, why not? I've never played that one.
Yeah,
no, I think
don't
like.
Don't questions that highlight our inadequacies as video game experts. That's not cool.
I think well, anyway. Hints were put into that game of like, they will eventually, like, the spell will eventually be broken or some shit. Like, it was kind of left open-ended.
Only when the castle raises above
the
crowd. Yeah,
I think it's because of how she was killed that made it so impactful. Like, it's just this innocent girl praying for the planet, and then just bam, like, sword through her stomach.
And then Inuyasha's
kind of brutal, too.
It tells you...
In front of Cloud.
Don't pray. I think is the lesson we can all...
Don't pray, or not Inuyasha will come and stab you?
That's my takeaway. Don't pray, or not Inuyasha will stab you through the chest.
I think it's just also because, like, I was talking about this with Dean earlier. Like, as screwed up as Sephiroth is, like, you can kind of understand why he's so mad, I guess. I don't know if anyone wants to, like...
Well, he's a byproduct of this. He wasn't, you know...
He's not Kefka from Final Fantasy VI.
Yeah, no, he's not,
he's
like...
Can't fucking talk. He's Liquid Snake.
Yeah, he's just a clone. And I mean, he's, again, like, of course he's mad because he's not a real human being. He's just a fucking artificial thing. And he's just...
Like, he realizes what he's made for.
The super soldier version of, you're not my real dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, in Final Fantasy VI, the villain was, like, Kefka was just a horrible... horrible person. Like, he was just like, I don't feel like walking around this town, so let's murder everyone in it by poisoning the water supply so I can walk in a straight line. And Sephiroth was just like, I have motives, things are being stabbed now.
I have angst. And, look, like, at Kefka, hair, I have angst.
Look,
well,
at my hair.
His motive was, like, he hated himself, which made him
hate the
world that made him.
Yeah,
so,
he was dark and brooding, and not necessarily... Like, it was, like, clear-cut evil, like someone like Kefka was. But I think that was one of my problems with this game's story was how interesting it was and how Dragon Ball Z it went in getting there.
You're just
walking along and, like, all right, so Sephiroth shows up, and he stabs a bunch of dudes, and then he gets away, and we're like, all right, let's go get him. And then they're just like, all right, we're going to chase after Sephiroth. And it's like, ooh, a town. I wonder what's in
first,
there.
First, let's go snowboarding.
Let's hang out here and learn everything you never wanted to know about Red 13's past. And then, like, you're 6 hours later, you're just like, all right, cool. We've spoken to everybody in the town. We've taken care of business. What were we doing? Oh, yeah, Sephiroth. Oh, look, 900 more bodies because we left him alone for 6 hours to learn whatever the hell was going on in this town. And now he's, like, 9 million miles away.
Oh, I think the other thing that was a little bothersome about it was the fact that, like, Cloud's just, I'm not strong enough. I'm not strong enough. And then all of a sudden, he just Super Saiyans up and literally flies away. And I'm like, what just happened? Where did that come from? When did he learn to fly?
Like, clearly underestimated the skills that can be acquired from breeding chocobos.
But Cloud too, like, all, like, these characters are so, like, just, they're just, like, screwed from the beginning. Like, his whole past was a lie too. Like, all of his memories were fake. Like, obviously you're gonna go through some sense of, like, self-doubt when you realize everything you knew was not real. Like,
well, he was the foil to Sephiroth, where Sephiroth was, you know, he pushed everyone away and became this incredible supervillain. Cloud was the other side of it, where he rose above it, even though he was just a mold of someone else.
He
and
forged
became
his friendships.
He forged his friendships and became his own identity, and essentially overcame the evil that was more or less his brother, I guess.
So why do you think in, like, all other, like, everything after Final Fantasy VII, they always portray him as so, like, down and dark? Like, when at the end of the game he's made his friendships, he's kind of in a better place, but then afterwards they make him so, like, emo, if you will, like, grungy.
Marketing.
They need another video game.
A super fun time happy Cloud living happily ever after does not sell games. Sad brooding sexy Cloud sells games.
Pouty lips Cloud, sexy little baby.
My car is named Cloud after Cloud Strife. It's a black Honda. I love it so much.
Impossibly awesome hair.
Seriously, like, David Tennant levels of hair are happening on this kid.
No, yeah, it's perfect hair. But like I said, I think they based his image, like, at least in Advent Children, off of his voice actor, who was Jason in General Hospital, if anyone watches General Hospital that listens to this podcast. But
I don't remember anybody on General Hospital with that hair.
He has yellow pointy hair. I'll send you a picture later.
No, I think the crossover of General Hospital and Stone Age Gamer listeners is probably a lot bigger than you think. I would imagine.
Well, they're all very specific fans of that Final Fantasy General Hospital crossover episode they did.
Oh, that was so good.
It really was.
Doctor
half computer generated. Alec Baldwin was in it.
Alec Baldwin used a limit break to do heart surgery. It was fucked up.
My favorite was Metal Gear and Night Court, actually.
Snake? Snake! You're guilty.
Guilty.
No, the cool thing about the story in Final Fantasy VII, because it is a really bananas story, like it, and we really don't have time to even give a bullet point version of the story. That's going to take another hour with everything that happens in it. But the really amazing part of this game is the depth and the growth of the characters, right? Like when you play through so many games, Sonic doesn't change from the beginning to the end. He's still just a blue fuck who runs fast, right? Like, there's not a lot of depth in a Sonic game.
No, he became Steve Urkel.
I don't know that that's progression or growth. Not sure.
Sort of.
But
he got some friends that he was really annoyed by.
I'm lost now. I don't know what we're talking about. He Sonic or Urkel?
Sonic. Sonic.
Oh, Sonic got friends.
Urkel voiced Sonic in the cartoon.
No, I know, but I thought you meant Urkel got friends. Fuck Urkel. Family Matters sucked.
Oh, okay.
That chick went up the stairs. She never came back down. That was bullshit writing. Anyway, but like to what Tiff mentioned earlier, like Barrett's story of him, you know, being this fucking asshole for the most part of like just murdering dudes and justifying it with some really not good reasons. Like, you know, I did this because I should. Shut up. You're stupid because you are, kind of thing. And the growth that character goes through of wanting to leave a better world for his daughter. The growth that fucking Sephiroth goes through. You know, even though it's, I think we would all agree, kind of negative because he's a murdering shithead. There's still a ton of growth in that character as he learns and as you go through the game. And there really weren't a lot of games before that conveyed it so effectively. Right, Final Fantasy VI has a ton of character development and a ton of growth and a really dope opera scene. But because the acting or the full motion video acting of the characters wasn't there, it's not as engrossing as something like Final Fantasy VII was. And again, that is really something that had a huge influence on the gaming industry, kind of as a whole. But the music, holy shit.
Oh my god.
Yes, the music in this game was also one of those things that just like really drove me to wanting to buy a PlayStation. And a lot of it was the fact that it was also, bring right back to the CD point, you could not have put this music on a cartridge because a lot of it was orchestrated, a lot of it had really high fidelity instruments, like piecing things together. Like, it was really complex music, and CD quality sound was a big deal, and fitting that stuff into a cartridge just wasn't possible. The compression that you would need to do to fit that stuff into a cart just wouldn't have sounded good.
Okay, all right, hang on. I would gladly take the DK64 rap over the Final Fantasy.
Oh, you shut your whore mouth.
That Chocobo song is so delightful.
It is, of course it is.
You guys really like Chocobos, huh?
Who doesn't like Chocobo?
Giant rideable chickens. Who wouldn't like them?
That's how I got Knights of the Round, damn it. I had to like Chocobos. I had to make them fuck. Like, it was a ridiculous thing.
Speaking of which, when we started this podcast, I turned on Final Fantasy VII and did Knights of the Round. It's not done yet.
That's impressive. Did you guys see the Toyota commercial where it's it's a Chocobo themed Toyota commercial?
What?
Yeah, look it up. It's great. It just came out, I think, last
God
week.
God damn it, Japan!
It's fantastic.
Is it really a Chocobo or is it actually like a chicken?
No, it's a car. It's not.
It's a Chocobo car.
No, Jesus, just watch the fucking
Chocobo.
Chocobos and Moogs. Ooh, Moogs.
Moogles.
Moogles are awesome.
Yeah, they are.
But yeah, probably my favorite song in the game is the battle music, and which is great because you hear it so often in the game. But that, God, that battle music was just ridiculous. It's so well put together, and it never got old for me. And I mean, you know, the boss music, like really a lot of the action music was great too. But a lot of the ambient stuff that happened in the backgrounds was well put together as well. I mean, Final Fantasy VII just has a remarkable, remarkable soundtrack.
And it's like close to 100 tracks or some shit, I think.
Yeah, I think it's 90-something. God, I can't remember.
Like that is a crazy amount of music for one game.
Thank Uncle Nobu.
Yeah, Nobu Uematsu. Holy crap. Really, really killed it on this one. I mean, he did Final Fantasy stuff, like, all over the map. I mean, let's see. His Square Enix stuff. He did some, you know, Final Fantasy Legends stuff for Game Boy. I think he did Final Fantasy VI as well, if I'm not mistaken. God, the Final Fantasy VI soundtrack was also amazing. But yeah, this soundtrack was really some of Uematsu's best work. Just phenomenal music, and really a sound design in general in the game was just remarkably well done, and something that could only be done on CDs, because just, you know, the DK rap wasn't until years later, and lots of progression in compression technology, but
so good,
so awful, God,
so great, bro, Lanky Kong, oh my God, so good. I play that every morning when I get up.
Ugh.
In the
that
shower.
Explains a lot. Gives me a lot of insight into your life, Dean.
So I suppose moving back to something quasi-related to this story would be like the legacy of Final Fantasy VII. The thing with Final Fantasy games is that there were never really sequels to them until they started farting out Final Fantasy VII type sequels. You had, what, like Crisis Core. And
there was a Vincent game.
Dirge of Cerberus.
Yeah, the Dirge of Cerberus and the movie Final Fantasy VII Advent Children, where, you know, creepy dudes with impossibly awesome hair steal children in an ice cream truck.
Yazoo
and
then
Sephiroth shows up for absolutely no goddamn reason. They fight.
There's a reason.
They fly. Yeah, the reason was we need Sephiroth in this movie, and now he's here.
That's a reason?
Just because you're a hater. I have the special edition DVD.
Oh, they're all special.
I think we're skipping over the best part of Final Fantasy VII. And quite honestly, the thing that... It is not my favorite Final Fantasy game. It is my second favorite. But what puts it almost at the top, like what really almost seals the deal for it, is the Materia system.
Oh, that's a good point.
That is my favorite, like, character progression system that they have ever had. It was dumbed down to a point because it took away, like, you didn't have to strategize your character party. You could just strategize your materia instead.
Well, I mean, you could. It was interchangeable, yeah. Which I guess, you know, took part of the strategy because you didn't have to customize the party with the members, but you had to customize the members themselves. So, you know, if you wanted, you could make Tifa glass cannon, Red your healer, and Cloud your, you know, your big meat shield.
Right.
But, you know...
Well, I really...
Different approach.
I really appreciated the fact that as I was playing through the game, if I got to a particular section and I was like, damn, I'm just getting my ass kicked here, like, I could just make all three characters tanks and throw them into the fight and try and win that way. And if that didn't work, I could switch it out to something else. As opposed to, well, fuck, I just have to go... It gave me an option instead of grinding for levels. I could customize the way I wanted to approach a battle, and I really liked that aspect of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it was... 10 took a similar approach where you could kind of cross over into other people's skill pools or whatever, and that was cool. Like, you know, you could go X amount into the one pool and then cross over into someone else's and get part of their skills, which was cool, which sort of the same approach. And then they sort of took four steps back with 13, but...
Okay, I liked 13's a little bit.
I'm not going to go into it.
Yeah.
I haven't played any since 8. I bought them. I haven't played them.
Good for you, Dan.
It's... Well, and it really, like...
I have a sealed copy of Final Fantasy 13.
Glad you didn't play it.
Not because
of make
not
your face
for
melt.
Any collector's reasons, just because I just never bothered to play it.
Because hallway simulator,
you know,
is that
well,
good.
Well, but I think
Dean,
that's another...
Dean doesn't give it enough credit sometimes, I think.
No, I don't, because it sucked.
It didn't suck.
It did.
Okay, just because you don't like it one way doesn't mean it was terrible.
Actually, it was unanimous that most people did not like that game.
Really?
Yeah.
I probably would like the game, to be honest with you, because, like, as time went on in my life, being able to play something like a giant open RPG, like the fact that Final Fantasy 13 was so much more linear, I probably would have liked that aspect of it, and if I ever do get around to playing it, I think I'm going to enjoy it. But what sold me on the game was actually the last trailer they released for it. It just got me. I was working at GameStop at the time when it came out, and I used to make these trailer DVDs for my store, and the final trailer for Final Fantasy 13 came out, and I was like impressed by it to an extent beforehand, but it had been so long in the making, and so many kind of misleading trailers of was like, what was the gameplay going to be like? What's the game actually going to look like? But when they released this final trailer, and I don't know what it was about it, they had this like kind of, not really J-pop song, but this kind of like weird Japanese ballad music playing during it, and it just got me. It was one of the most well put together game trailers I'd ever seen, and it was like, I watched that trailer and I was like, I'm buying this game. I will spend the money on this game. This trailer has sold me on this game. And then I bought it and I never got around to playing it because I suck.
Yeah, it's like many main people's complaint, which is Dean's complaint, is that it's linear, and it's something that either you got to get used to or you just got to suck it up for one game. I mean, the story's worth it, I think. I thought the story was good. I liked the leveling up system. Dean didn't. I guess it's your taste. I mean, I'm in with the new age crowd, I guess.
Hang on a second, because it goes from linear, and then right at the end of the game, right at the last, like, maybe 3 or 4 hours.
That was Lost Odyssey, too, though.
It just opens up, and there's an open world, and it's like, what the fuck? Where was this the entire... No, but it's stupid. There was no point to do that. You could have just finished the fucking game that you made and did it. Instead, you wanted to change it at the last 10 minutes and say, oh, hey, here, this was the game you wanted the whole time. Here you go. I didn't want that. I didn't. I just wanted to beat it at that point. I wanted for it to fucking be over because I invested in the story. And then at that point, I was like, fuck it. I don't want it anymore. I don't want it. And I turned it off and I never played it again until 4 years later when I was like, you know what? Let me try it. Let me try beating it. And I did. But it took 4 years to fucking do it. It took 4 years of me working up the courage to just grind, literally grind, to beat the stupid game.
It took me like 8 years to beat Kingdom Hearts, but I did it. It's
Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I think that kind of brings it to a point, though, of one of the other like kind of lasting effects that Final Fantasy VII has had on the gaming industry is that, at least for me anyway, it kind of introduced me to the concept of iteration fatigue. Of okay, I get it, but why the fuck? Why are there 15 of these already? Like, it wasn't all that long ago. Give me some time. Let's like, I'm tired of it now.
Well, I think they adopted the EA format for a while, and then they quickly realized, thank God for them, that it wasn't working, and they can't do that because they were just releasing shovelware at some point.
Right, it just,
you know,
it got
to
a point
where... I mean, the progression
where...
of Final Fantasy was weird, because you had, alright, so you had 7, which came off the heels of 6, and in a decent amount of time, there were several years between those two games, and an entire generational gap. And then you had 8 and 9, which came out in fairly quick succession, but they were so dramatically different from one another, especially 9, that it didn't really bother me how quickly they came out. And then you had Final Fantasy X, which was the first PlayStation 2 one, which was also a really radical departure for the series. It looked and played and specifically sounded, because it brought in voice acting, very different from the other games. Then you had 11, which was an MMO... which was a totally radical departure, and a lot of people, like myself included, didn't even bother with it because I wasn't interested in that kind of experience from a Final Fantasy game.
Well, many people didn't. You weren't the only one.
Well, yeah, but then by the time Final Fantasy XII came out, it had been a very long time since Final Fantasy X because I skipped over 11, and then 13 was delayed and delayed and then it was
you're forgetting
10-2.
Yeah, you're
10,
forgetting 10-2 and 12. Yeah.
12, Final Fantasy, yeah, well, that's what I was saying. 12 was a long gap between 10 and 12, because 11 we skipped. And then 13 was a huge gap between that again, because it got delayed a billion times, and then you started having sequels, like 10-2, and obviously there was other stuff like Final Fantasy Tactics and Tactics Advance, and whatever the hell else was involved out there. But
Tactics was my
I don't know that I don't know that I ever experienced the kind of sequelization fatigue out of the Final Fantasy games, because I did always appreciate that they tried to do something different out of a numbered Final Fantasy game. I think where that fatigue started to come from was from what we brought up before, was the fact that they started pumping out sequels to things. Like, I don't know anybody that was requesting Final Fantasy X-2.
Like, no, no one was. I think it was...
And, but it was so unnecessary. And the same thing with like all this Lightning Returns and whatnot, Final Fantasy 13. All that ever struck me as was just like, Square Enix made this engine for this game, and they're going to use it. They're going to use the shit out of it. They're going to make as many games as they can with this engine and these characters, because they poured so much goddamn money into it. And they need to make that money back, which goes back to the other point of, like, Final Fantasy VII set that bar and set JRPGs on that path of having to be crazy expensive in order to match what people expected RPGs to look like.
Well, I mean, I sort of count these extra, like, games, like 10-2, Dirge of Cerberus, and all those into this sequelization of these video games, because this was them being like, well, we're not going to have another game for a while, so we're going to put in all these short ones. And if they just focused on, you know, working on just one really good game instead of doing all these, you know, tertiary games, it might have been better. Just saying.
Well, I hear Final Fantasy 15 is supposed to be pretty good.
I have been waiting for this since I watched that teaser trailer in my junior year of high school physics class. That is when I first watched the teaser trailer for 15. That's when it was 13-2. Was that what it was called? Or no, 13X or something like that?
13 Verses or something.
13 Verses, yeah. And I said, Dean, I'm so excited for this. And Dean was like, huh, that game is never gonna come out ever. And I'm like, you know what? It will one day. Don't worry. And guess what? It finally fucking is soon.
Yeah, so, it's been like 6 years. Yeah, congratulations.
Dean, is it fucking coming out, Dean, or is it
not coming
out? I
was just about
out?
To say, can we all stop and appreciate the Dean impersonation that Jess does? Because I was like, wow, did he just jump in right on cue to say his line? That was amazing.
It just made me so mad for years. He always, it's not coming out, not coming out, not coming out.
See, there it
it's
is again. Out. Who even was that talking?
That was Marge.
Marge pops in to do the impersonations.
That's Dean's limit break. Summons Marge.
You don't want me to drop that on you. You don't want any of that.
Well, and Ken, the final point that I want to make about Final Fantasy VII and its impact is that it has, since the PlayStation 2 came out, one of its impacts on gaming has been the disappointment at rumors and teasers and the fact that we don't have the HD remake of it yet, which everybody wants.
But no one's
but we're apparently never going to get it. That is part of its legacy, is that it has now become a thing that everybody wants, and it's become a frustration point. You know, like, Final Fantasy VII is not my favorite Final Fantasy game, and if they came out and they were like, look, we could do this, but we would need to charge $100 for the game. Done. Sold. I'm in. I'll pre-order the fucking thing. You know? Like, I would pay $100 for that, which is a ridiculous amount of money to play for a thing I already fucking played 20 years ago. But
the fact of the matter is, it goes back to what you were saying before. This game's ugly by today's standards. And since it is a good game, if you can take away the ugly and make it a game that works with a lot of modern sensibilities, it's one of those things that kind of begs to be remade. Because a lot of stuff from that generation, like early polygonal 32-bit, 64-bit generation stuff, has not aged well at all. And bringing that kind of stuff with modern sensibilities, like, I mean, Majora's Mask 3D just came out, and that's great. It's nice to see Majora's Mask in a way that is not friggin' hideous, because a lot of that game is goddamn ugly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still waiting for my Blasto upscale. I mean,
god fucking damn it, I was gonna say that, you son of a bitch. Oh my god, that was literally on the tip of my tongue. Fuck you. I love you, but fuck you.
That was Jesse talking.
That was Jesse. God damn it, that was a good Jesse impersonation, Dean. Holy shit.
So what do you think? Poll. Will we ever get the Final Fantasy VII remake, Dan?
Yes.
Ooh, Tiff?
Not a chance. There's no way they could live up to
when
the
hell
hype.
Freezes over.
And Jess?
We will get it when Square Enix is going bankrupt and they need to make money.
They're not going to be able to do it when they're going bankrupt. If it costs $145 million to do the ugly one.
No, they will do it, Tim. They'll do it.
They'll borrow. They'll borrow, cheat, and steal.
They will borrow a loan, and they will make so much money back.
They did it the first time when they had to make the original. They'll do it again.
It is.
Yeah. I'm sure
it is,
people are willing to spend money for this. Yeah. Kickstarters and stuff. Like, people are willing.
It's the trump card.
To donate.
It is the ultimate trump card. It's like... It is very similar to the Pokemon franchise, and the fact that there is not a Pokemon MMO is kind of a ridiculous thing that it doesn't exist. But when they need it, that's the thing that will come out, because that is a guaranteed billion-dollar fucking thing. Same thing with a Final Fantasy VII HD remake, because you couldn't... The problem with remaking this game is that it has to be remade. There is no way to upscale that to anything that would be acceptable. You can look at the PC version, which is upscaled a little bit, and it still looks like shit.
So yeah, if you give me higher resolution of those chibi little douche knuckles, I'm gonna be pissed.
And the thing is, too, they kind of have to remake it for at least when like our generation. I'm saying this loosely because I know I'm a lot younger than you guys. Is still around for it to be relevant, because the newer generation kind of won't even understand what Final Fantasy VII is or what impact it made. So it's to them, it'll just be like, who cares about this game?
Right.
But if we're still all at an age where it's like acceptable for us to be buying Final Fantasy VII, I think it needs to be happening at least within 10 years.
Well, yeah.
They can't wait too long.
You couldn't put out a $60 like brand new game and not have voice acting in it. Like, the industry has changed.
No. Mm-hmm.
You can put out a $15 downloadable title that doesn't have voice acting, and everybody would accept that. There are certain things that need to be in a modern game now.
Agreed.
Well, and there's certain things that the newer generation of gamers expect from a Final Fantasy game, and that just wouldn't be acceptable. And that's part of what made the game stumble to begin with. So if you're gonna remake it, the goal would be to fix the things that were wrong. And what's wrong is the stupid little polygon figures and the having to read massive conversations and backstories and whatnot. Those are the things that are a problem. So if you're gonna do it, fix those things.
Are Fang and Vanille lesbians?
What?
Yes.
Yeah.
Fang and Vanille.
That was Final Fantasy 13. I was like,
I thought
yeah,
you said, what I do think you think of vanilla thing. Lesbians?
That's what I heard.
What?
I love vanilla lesbians. I mean,
they come in flavors? I'm in.
I mean, I guess it's up to interpretation, but I believe yes.
Huh.
That's it. That's all. I was just sitting here, and I was like, I think that was a thing. I'm going to ask Jessie. She played the game.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Chris, what's your opinion? Will we ever see it?
Well, you know what? I kind of agree with your thought process that if Square Enix, it's one of their trump cards. But I actually look at it a little bit more like the Marvel and the Ultimate Universe, which I don't remember who went on record as saying, but I think it was Bendis actually that said when the regular 616 starts crossing over with the Ultimate Universe, you know we've run out of ideas.
Yeah,
and. hey, look what's happening now. Although here it's pretty good. Yeah, that's kind of what I feel like if we're ever going to get that Final Fantasy VII remake, because it's one of those things that you know that they have to be aware of. It's kind of like at last year's E3 presentation when Nintendo had that Robot Chicken segment and the character said, where's Mother 3? And then Reggie shot him with laser eyes or something.
Yeah,
like,
well,
yeah,
they have to be aware from the PlayStation experience when... Dude came out, the Square Enix guy came out, and got booed off the fucking stage because he cock teased everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like they.
Oh, with that demo, that how many years ago was that when they showed?
No, this was
the PlayStation 3 thing.
This was just last year.
This was just last year
when they were like.
And that's one of the things like that makes me think maybe they don't know, because they thought that guy trotting out and saying we've upscaled a PC version was gonna be enough. Like, they thought that was a good idea.
Yeah, they were really was so wrong. Bad.
And it there has to be somebody at Square that understands that this is a potential money making idea, but they need to save it because it is their goddamn trump card.
I don't think they do. I think you're right, because they fired half their staff 75 times over. I'm pretty sure everyone that works there now is new right off the bat. I'm pretty sure there's just a bunch of interns that work there nowadays.
Well, you just have to wonder, do anybody that work at these companies, do they have internet access?
Probably not, no. Because
I sort of feel
they're like... shackled down.
I sort of feel like this isn't, like, hidden information.
No, well, it's not.
My favorite was when I got an email from Final Fantasy, like, 14, when that one was online, and they fucked it up royally, being like, our bad, here's 3 free months, and just so you know, we fired half our staff and rehired new guys, so the game will be better. We promise. And I was like, I don't know if I should feel good or bad about that. I don't... You fired a lot of people. I don't... Why? It wasn't that bad. Actually, it was that bad. It was probably worth that.
Well, to bring it back in, because we've been going for a while now, we're going to have to call it a night, but regardless of anything, I think we all in some ways liked Final Fantasy VII. Like, I'm not a huge fan. I know Tiff's not a huge fan either, but I can glean from the conversations we had that there are certain aspects of the game that we like, and at the very least, every one of us wants to like this game.
I fucking love this game. Don't get me wrong. I fucking love this game.
Yeah, second.
I really want to like that game. I really do, and I've tried on several occasions, but the bottom line is that this game did have... it's one of the most pivotal games that's happened to the gaming industry. It was a game changer, quite literally, on a lot of levels. It made a lot of things different, and it should always be noted for that. So, thank you again for writing in to the show and suggesting this episode. We greatly appreciated it.
Somebody please write in and ask for a Toe Jam and Earl episode, goddammit.
Oh, Jesus.
I'll write in and ask for it.
Thank you, Jess.
You're welcome.
Anyway, we've reached that time, so Dean, would you kindly do the thing?
Wait. Jess, can you do a Dean impersonation doing the thing? All you have to do is say show notes.
Show notes!
Uncanny.
Shut up, you're terrible. Check out the show notes, because this is me and I'm saying so, not some cheesy impersonator.
Yeah, I hear you,
I get
Jess.
Paid the big bucks. Shut up, Dan.
Okay, Jess.
Fuck you.
Jeez.
Anyway, check out the show notes where we have all our social links listed and maybe some links to even some Final Fantasy stuff you could look at. Though I doubt it, because I think we explained everything in its entirety. If you want to contact us about anything we talked about, there will also be an email link in the show notes. And this is Dean, not Jesse.
Sounds exactly the like end. Something Jess would say.
Mm-hmm. I
Thanks,
agree.
Thanks, Jess. Good job.
You're welcome. Thank you.
God, I don't even know who's talking anymore. This is ridiculous.
I don't even know where I live at this point.
You're fucking fired.
Oh.
Jess is the authority to fire us?
That's weird. Jess, say Robert Downey Jr.
Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, perfect.
Is there a reason why?
Listen to last week's episode.
Oh, Jess doesn't listen to the show.
I know.
No, I actually do sometimes. I didn't listen to last week's. Watch it. Yeah, you know. Watch it.
She gets the special edition
that we do for the podcast. Okay, Chris, end the show.
Anyway, so thanks again for listening, everybody. Thank you, our special guest, Jay Payne, for joining us and doing some phenomenal Dean impersonations. And yes, if you want to write into the show and suggest something that you want us to talk about or anything at all, we love to hear from you. We love to hear from all of you. So. Send us your letters, your emails, your carrier pigeons, whatever you got, because we love hearing from people that aren't us. Next week's episode, we're going to be doing our Games of May just a little bit early because June is going to be a jam-packed month with a couple of interviews and special shows that we're going to be doing. So next week is going to be our Games of May. And yeah, thanks again for listening. Have yourselves a great night. Dan, you are encouraged as possibly be. That was poorly worded.
That was a terrible sentence.